Welcome. You're listening to Cancer Peace Radio.
Cancer Peace Radio is on the air because 2 out of every 3 Americans will receive a cancer diagnosis in their lifetime. This means every single one of us will be impacted in some way by cancer.
Welcome to Cancer Peace Radio, changing the face of cancer in America. I am Mark Barright, a 13-year caregiver and cancer advocate. I am your host for Cancer Peace Radio. It's not okay that 1.2 million Americans will be diagnosed with cancer in 2013. That's over 4,500 Americans are diagnosed with cancer each and every day. It's not okay that a child is diagnosed with cancer every 4 minutes. It's not okay that there are over 14 million cancer survivors in America that need survivorship care plans. Today we are dispensing with our normal format in order to go directly into our interview. Dr. Contreras and Daniel Kennedy work with Oasis of Hope Cancer Hospital in Baja California and Mexico, which has treated more than 100,000 patients and just celebrated their 50th anniversary. Their new book, 50 Critical Cancer Answers, shares personal experiences and hundreds of tips from cancer survivors and cancer victors. Readers will gain a better understanding of clinical trials, suggestions for building a strong immune system, emotional healing, financial costs, the benefit of exercise, and finding the determination to live. You know, I was contacted by Bill Larrow, and he was kind enough to forward your new book, 50 Critical Cancer Answers, which we all found very informative here. Each chapter is kind of interesting, includes an interview with an expert in the field of the chapter's topic with a smartphone scannable QR code linking the reader to a video that contains your commentary on the relevant topic. You invite readers to listen to your Q&A podcast, which, you know, I found very cool and very helpful.
Wonderful. Well, that... This book is, you know, the future of books, and we wanted to provide our readers with the best information in a format that is conducive to make informed decisions about their disease.
Great. What is your hope for those reading 50 Critical Cancer Cures?
Well, the Bible says in Hosea, my people perish for lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And we find that most cancer patients make their decisions out of fear.
Yeah.
And so the main goal in our book is to reduce and hopefully get rid of the fear so that patients can understand what's happening and all the possibilities that are available to them, and not be coerced into deciding a therapy that after beginning this therapy that usually is very harsh, they will not be convinced that that is the best for them, and that is one of the main reasons for failures in oncology, that patients are not a part of the decision-making process, yeah, and they are lured into therapies that are not conducive to health and, in many cases, are very ineffective.
Right. What are some of the highlights readers will discover while reading this book?
Daniel, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I think one of the most powerful things about this book is at the end of the chapter, we include cancer victor tips from 50 patients that have been diagnosed with cancer, had advanced stage cancer, but were able to control or reverse it. And they give us the 5 top things, in their opinion, their experience, what they did to beat cancer. So it's one thing to read what the experts say. It's another thing to read what people who have actually beat cancer recommend. And I think that that's the best feature of the book. And the common denominator through all 50 was faith and food. Every single person mentioned about how they needed to grow closer to God. They needed to increase their faith. They needed to increase their prayer life. But they also talked about the importance of a lifestyle change and eating foods that were healing versus harmful. In our chapter on healing foods, we have a little chart, and it has like 16 different foods, for people to just highlight what's healing and to cross out what's harmful. And on the list, there's things like broccoli and garlic and pizza and milkshakes. And the reason why we put that there is because we know that people know what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat. So it's deeper. There has to be a motivation to stop being self-destructive and to start promoting one's own health.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. What would you say to someone who has been recently diagnosed with cancer?
Well, I think that the most important thing is for all of us to understand that when somebody is diagnosed with cancer, they go through different phases. And our book is trying to graduate a patient from one phase to the next. The first two phases are quite negative and destructive. The first one is usually denial. It's short-lived because, you know, the facts are usually very clear for a patient. The second phase is anger, the famous why me phase. So we try to help our patients reframe that into not why me, but what for. And if you help a patient find a reason for this in that all things come together for good, which is not easy, okay?
Uh-huh.
How can a cancer be for any good for anybody? But the Bible clearly states that all things come together for good. Once you get past that, then you get to a phase that is quite positive, which is negotiation. And so we negotiate for life with God by different means, and of course one of them is medical treatment. In the fourth phase that we want to bring our patients to with all of this information, it's lastly that, you know, I know that it's me, I know what for, I'm doing the best that I can, the most responsible thing that I can, I'm doing my treatment, I'm changing my ways, and now the fourth phase is the phase where you rely on God in God's grace, and you say, God, I'm here, I'm doing the best that I can, and now I want you to know that you are in control. Once a patient gets to that phase, then that's when they set themselves up for miracles. And so through reading our book, we want to bring the patients into that conclusion. And I truly believe that because we've helped so many patients achieve that at the Oasis of Hope, our results are so much better because there's so many miracles going on.
Yes, and miracles do happen. You were talking a little bit about fear earlier, and you mentioned just how powerful of a force fear is. How can people remain calm during a cancer prognosis?
Yes, fear definitely is a stronghold of cancer. And the main reason for fear is not that you're going to die. We all know that we're going to die.
Yes, yes.
The biggest problem is when somebody gives you a date that you're going to die. And usually cancer comes with that. And so people associate cancer with sudden death. And when people do not know what's going to happen afterwards, there's a tremendous amount of fear.
Right.
So the best way to control the fear is the person of Jesus Christ. And that's, you know, our main mission at the Oasis of Hope is to present the person of Jesus Christ. Because when you know that you have the ticket to heaven, that everything is going to be lastly resolved, then that's the only way that fear is going to go away. When you know, no matter what happens, I am going to be in the presence of God for the rest of eternity, the fear then will subside. And you acquire that peace that surpasses all understanding. That's the only way that I've seen that patients can then stop being fearful. There's no question that all of us would like to negotiate for more time on this earth. You know, everybody's saying this is a terrible place to be. I'd rather be in heaven. But when you get a date, it's like, well, can we not change this date for a later time? I want to see my grandchildren sweating and stuff like that. So all of those human things that God blessed us with, they're still there. But if you know for a fact that you are going to spend eternity with the Lord, then you acquire that peace in your heart. And that's really the only way to do it.
Amen, amen. We talked a little bit earlier, Mr. Kenny, you were talking about food and diet and exercise. And we all know that nutrition and food plays a very, very big part in the role of our health. Are there some healing foods that can help us fight cancer?
Well, there definitely is, and Dr. Contreras speaks so much about healing foods, and I love that because he's an oncologist, and most oncologists, when you ask them if nutrition is important, the oncologist is just worried about weight loss because that can happen when people are taking chemotherapy and radiation. It can become very difficult to eat. And so oncologists will encourage their patients to eat whatever they can, especially high-calorie foods. One of the most common things is candy bars and milkshakes. But those foods feed the cancer. Yeah. Cancer thrives on any food that converts into sugar quickly and raises the blood sugar level in the bloodstream. And so what we recommend are the foods that are low on the glycemic index. Okay. And some of the most powerful foods God has put on earth are the vegetables in the cruciferous family. Mm-hmm. And I love the way Dr. Contreras explains what cruciferous is. But if you cut the stem off, you'll see the shape of the cross. And that's amazing to see that that stamp of the cross is there in the food.
That's really cool.
Well, for me, it's such a blessing. I'm a counselor, but I get to go to work every day with this phenomenal oncologist that teaches me how I can live healthy, and so it's just great. This book is full of practical tips that the reader can do at home to start positioning themselves today for healing.
Fantastic. Now, what are some of the foods that we need to stay away from?
Well, all processed foods are not good for us because the processing of food really was designed to make money. In other words, if you process food, you are going to have a longer shelf life. And in order to do that, a number of chemicals are combined or mixed in with the foods. And these preservatives are generally very bad for us, and many of them are cancer-causing agents. So we need to consume the food as close as possible to the way God put it on this earth. So all processed foods are not good for us. One tip that I give our patients is that if you know, in order to prolong shelf life, is for food not to rot. And what causes the food to rot is bacteria and other bugs invading the food. And so if a bug does not touch that food, you shouldn't either. you know, all of this pesticides and all of this preservatives are really making our lives convenient but short. So as a rule of thumb, anything that is processed, you shouldn't consume. The other, obviously, is that the foods that God put on this earth should be consumed without any additional chemicals like the pesticides that I was talking about. So organically grown foods are the best. And lastly, again, a general rule, if you count your teeth out of 34 teeth, we have only 4 canine teeth. So yes, we were designed to eat meat, but 4 out of 34 is just a little bit more than 10%. So our plate should look very full of vegetables, with very little, only 10% of our calories should come from animal products. So when you put all of those things into consideration, you will know what to eat and what not to eat. And the Bible also gives us a list of things that we should and should not consume. And that continues to be very good for us because God designed us, okay? And a lot of people say, well, no, you know, that list is in the Old Testament, and we don't need to take those into consideration because Jesus came and he abrogated the law. Well, it's true that he abrogated the law. Before Jesus Christ, eating pork would send you to hell. After Christ, eating pork will send you to heaven sooner.
I like that. I like that. All right. Now, a very important question. How can cancer impact someone emotionally and spiritually?
You know, there's many ways that we could answer this question, but I want to talk about the way that it can impact a person positively, because okay. Nobody, when you think about a diagnosis of cancer, can think anything can come from it that would be good. As Dr. Contreras mentioned in an earlier answer, we see our patients really struggling with Romans 8:28. How, if God is a loving God, could he be working through me being diagnosed with cancer for good? But what we see, when you come alongside and you give support and you give information like is included in our book and the group sessions like we do at the hospital, we see that when people face cancer, often they slow down and they start to reevaluate their entire life, and they look at what their values are and they put different priorities on things. And we see many of our patients getting much deeper into the Word of God, spending more time in praise and worship, making amends and restoring their relationship with their spouse. And we see so many of our patients go through this amazing transformation where they say, before I had cancer, I was not close to God. I was not close to my family. I was busy at work all the time. I wasn't really living. But now that I've faced with cancer, I've redone my whole life, established new values, and I'm the happiest I have ever been. And that is one way cancer can kind of force a person to look at, what are you really doing with your life? And so there is a positive side, emotionally and spiritually. The negative side is that people can be paralyzed by fear. And we've talked about fear quite a bit on this interview. And so we work with our patients. And we try to share in the book what we've been doing for, well, it was started by Dr. Contreras' father, who is my grandfather, 50 years ago. Dr. Contreras has been working at Oasis of Hope for the last 30 years. I've been working there for 20 years. So we have 50 years of combined experience that we're trying to share with people in the book to empower them, because you don't have to fear cancer. And Dr. Contreras says it so well when he says, you actually have a choice to be a cancer victim or to be a cancer victor. And that battle is won in your emotions and your spiritual life before it's won in the body.
Yeah, I think we need to keep living even after cancer diagnosis, don't we?
We do, and you know, we share this. I just had a session with the patients earlier this week, and we share this truth, which is, you know, you can be cancer-free, but still living with the fear of cancer. And then there's other people. We have a patient from Germany, and her tips are in our book. Her name is Berga, and she still has active cancer in her body 25 years after she was first diagnosed. But she has no fear of it, and it's completely under control. When she was first diagnosed with cancer, she found out she was also pregnant, and the oncologist in Germany said that the baby would not survive the chemotherapy, so he suggested an abortion. Mm-hmm. And she said, no way possible. Mm-hmm. She came to Oasis of Hope, had natural therapies, and 25 years later, that baby has children. So she's now a grandmother for the decision she made. But if you would take a tumor marker, it would say in her body there's still some cancer activity. But she has found a way to live free from the fear of it, and the cancer has not progressed in 25 years, and she comes back every year to volunteer to help others. So, you know, the person who is cured of cancer goes into remission but fears that it will come back every day is not the cancer victor. They're the victim. But Berga, who actually still has some active cancer but is living her life to the fullest, she is the cancer victor.
Yeah, beautiful story. That kind of leads into the next question as well. What are some alternative treatments to consider for those that are fighting cancer, like what Berga went through?
Well, I think that this is what's most important about our book is laying before or presenting our patients or our readers with a large catalog of possibilities. Most people and doctors believe that the only way to fight cancer is through surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. And that is one of the most troubling lies, in my opinion, that people believe. And for that reason, their way to fight cancer is extremely limited, and the results are very, very poor. A lot of times, you know, people will hear, well, you know, these are very proven therapies, and that's what I need to do because that's what my doctor told me. Well, the proof is in the numbers. This year, more people are going to die of cancer than last year. Yeah. And thus, you know, the most conventional therapies or more studied therapies by the establishment have proven to be of very little effect. So people need to look for alternatives. And I'm not saying that everything in the conventional side is wrong and that all of the therapies offered by alternative doctors are good, because at the Oasis of Hope, from the incept 50 years ago, in 1963, my father started with the idea of complementing and integrating both conventional and alternative therapies for the benefit of our patients. So there's a place for everything, and it's not what you use, but how you use it. And this is one of the things that we're trying to inform our patients and teach our patients that and readers that they have a number of possibilities before them, and that a lot of times a combination of therapies is the best for them. And also, we let them know that there are some therapies where conventional therapy really shines, and there are some cancers where conventional therapy really shines, and there are others where it shouldn't even be tried because the statistics are so overwhelmingly have so overwhelmingly proven that they're of no value to a patient. So why waste time, energy, and quality of life in something that is going to be of no value? So this is what's very important for patients to understand. The alternatives obviously are varied and complicated to explain in an interview like this, but diet, exercise, supplements are very important part of alternatives. There are therapies in Mexico, for instance, Laetrile has proven to be extremely effective in some cancers. We are using high-dose vitamin C in a protocol that is very comprehensive that actually makes it work as chemotherapy without the side effects and, you know, at a very little cost in comparison to chemotherapy. There are other measures like ozone therapy that has proven to be very effective as a direct anti-tumor agent, but also as a preconditioning element for other therapies to work better, be it chemotherapy or vitamin C or Laetrile. So there are many, many alternatives out there. How you use chemotherapy in different ways is also an alternative way to treat cancer patients. So there are many alternatives out there, and the more you learn about them, the better you can make decisions for your personal condition. Because even though there are you know, cancers out there that are well known, every cancer is different for every patient. So we need to understand that, and usually the more effective therapies are the ones that are personalized. What I mean by this is that two people can be diagnosed with the same disease and not respond to the same therapy because of you know, a number of factors that will differentiate those tumors, even though they're both tumors of the breast, for instance, or both tumors of the colon. So these are the things that need to be taken into consideration. And when you take those things into consideration, that's when you get better results. And that's what we do at the Oasis of Hope.
Can you hold on while we slip away for a word from one of our sponsors?
Do you ever have doubts that hold you back from going after your dream? Well, I know that I do. Hi, my name is Paul Blaze, and I'm the host of Doubt the Doubt. If you need some encouragement, then check out the podcast Doubt the Doubt on iTunes, where you'll hear incredible stories that'll help you say, I can do it.
Okay, we are back. Doctor, can you expand a little bit? You talked a little bit about the vitamin C and how it helps fight cancer. I know we have someone up here that's going through a vitamin C regimen right at the moment. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing because originally Dr. Linus Pauling believed that we could actually antioxidate a cancer cell because they live in oxidative stress. They like oxidation rather than reduction. And so, you know, the best known, or at that time, one of the best known antioxidating agents was vitamin C. So he started giving vitamin C to the patients, and lo and behold, he was able to prove in two published studies that patients that took vitamin C in very high dosages at that time, it was 10 grams of vitamin C, lived 1 year longer than the patients that didn't take it. All of these patients had been sent home to die. All of the therapies had failed them. And so vitamin C prolonged the life of the patients for 1 year. But he was not able to determine what was the mode of action. He thought that it was antioxidation. Many years later, 30 years later, a group of scientists at the NIH discovered that vitamin C in very high dosages would be an oxidative element rather than antioxidation at dosages between 50 and 100 grams. So they did a number of studies, and they were published, where they were able to prove that very high doses of vitamin C in the presence of oxygen within the tumor would oxidate the tumor, very similarly to chemotherapy. That's the way chemotherapy works, and that's the way radiation therapy works. So it was a shock to the system that vitamin C would convert itself into an oxidant. And so that is how it works. It actually oxidizes the cell, kills the cell, without any damage whatsoever, and it kills it in the same way that chemotherapy and radiation therapy does, but very selectively. So that's the beauty of vitamin C.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. Is vitamin C panning out to have the same types of responses that traditional chemotherapy would have?
Well, let me tell you what the problem is the system. In order for it to really pan out, and many people are doing high dose vitamin C, but most people, I will tell you, 90% of the people that are doing that have no clue on how to make it work.
Right.
As chemotherapy. But the reason it's not panning out is because it's a completely natural element. You can't patent it. And in order to get it through the FDA, it would cost around $800 million to do it. And nobody's going to spend $800 million on doing all the work that needs to be done for the FDA to approve it because it's not patentable, and so people will never get their money back.
Right.
And that's why it's not panning out. But fortunately for people like us, where that is not important, we will continue to use it, and I hope that more and more people will begin using it correctly, because it's not just the vitamin C, it's the whole preconditioning that needs to be done in order for it to work. But when it clicks, the results are incredible.
Super. I'm going to change things up a little bit. Another thing we hear a lot about is alkaline-forming and acid-forming foods. Can you talk about that a little bit?
There's a lot of confusion there because tumors will provoke or promote an acidic environment. And the reason for that is that they produce their energy basically from anaerobic metabolism. I won't make this more complicated, but when you do that, the waste material are acids, lactic acids specifically, and other acids. And so their environment is acidic, and they like that acidic environment. So the initial thought is, well, if we eat alkaline foods, we will alkalinize the tumor and kill it. Well, we know now that that really doesn't happen, because our body has an incredible buffering system. So no matter how acidic the food you consume, your body is going to bring the pH to 7.4, no matter what you do. I don't know if you knew this, but yeah. One Coca-Cola, in order to neutralize the pH of one Coca-Cola, you need 10 gallons of water.
Wow.
So why is it that you don't die when you drink a Coca-Cola and it's not followed by 10 gallons of water? Because your body is going to buffer it. What is true is that the buffering of acids is at a cost, at a metabolic cost to us. The buffering of alkaline substances is buffered at a benefit to us. And that's why God put so many alkaline foods out there and so few acid foods. So again, if we consume the foods the way God put them on this earth, most of them are going to be alkaline. Now, as far as the tumor is concerned, we know that there are two elements that can actually impact the pH of the tumor. Food will not. But there are some studies that show that baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, will effectively impact the pH of the tumor. That will go and change and alkalinize the tumor, and that can be very beneficial if you do it at the right time. Again, that's another complicated issue, but we can actually impact the pH of the tumor by consuming sodium bicarbonate. The other one is omeprazole. Omeprazole is a drug that was designed to help people with gastritis. Is Nexium, I think, is the commercial name. That has proven to directly impact the the pH of the tumor. And we use those two elements because it is definitely beneficial to change the pH of a tumor when you are not using an acidic substance to kill it. For instance, vitamin C is a very mild acid substance. So while we're using vitamin C, we do not want to change the pH of the tumor to be alkaline, because then vitamin C is going to be neutralized before it kills the tumor. So many things need to be taken into consideration, and I hope that I brought some light to this issue, because it is very important, it is complicated, and most people misuse it.
Doctor, I have to ask you another question. We hear a lot about alkaline water and these alkaline water machines that are out there. Can you maybe help us understand what that's all about and if it's something that's good?
Yes, if you actually have a machine in your house and you alkalinize the water, as I tell you, anything that you consume alkaline, your body is going to buffer it at a benefit to you. At a metabolic benefit to you. If you buy alkaline water is very unstable, and very soon, in about a half an hour, it's going to come back to neutral. to around 7.0.
Right.
There's people in, we have a machine here at the hospital that actually alkalinizes the water. So if you have that machine and you alkalinize your water and you drink it very soon after it's produced, it is beneficial to you because you are going to be giving a break to your body from all of the acids that normally we are consuming. All processed food is acidic, all of it.
Right. That's very helpful because that seems to be a question that comes up all of the time. Why do you believe a patient should integrate alternative and conventional treatments?
Well, as I mentioned to you, there are many, many tumors that are extremely aggressive. You know, there's a lot of people in the alternative movement that want to belittle the foe of cancer, and it's a formidable foe. And so, at the Oasis of Hope, we try to find Achilles' heels all over the place, and we use a multi-pronged approach to combat cancer. And sometimes a combination of conventional therapies and alternative therapies is the best for patients. Unless, let's say, primary tumors of the lung have never responded to either chemotherapy, and most of them do not respond to radiation therapy. There are some that will do. And so conventional therapy has not proven to be very effective. Stage 4 cancer of the lung patients is the number one cause of death in men and women in the United States. So in cancer of the lung, we have been a lot more effective with only alternative therapies. And so our 5-year survival rate is 20% in comparison to 0% with conventional therapies. But in general, we will do a combination of therapies, and we will only do them when we are convinced that they are going to improve the quality of life of our patients or will give us a better chance of longevity with our patients. I think that's the main question, is it conducive to quality of life or not? Because a lot of times we give chemotherapy to prolong a life of a patient, but with a terrible quality of life.
Yeah.
And so in those cases, we do not recommend it at all. For us, paramount is quality of life, whether it's for the next 10 minutes or the next 10 years.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. We're asked all the time about clinical trials. I find that people are reluctant to get involved in clinical trials. Are clinical trials reliable?
I think that they are. They will give you objective information. It's a little bit complicated, and the reason why a lot of us will not do clinical trials is because of the cost. They are terribly costly. We have done a number of clinical trials at the Oasis of Hope. Most of them retrospective, and retrospective clinical trials have very limited objective value, but they do have value. And we have done a number of prospective clinical trials. Those are the ones that are considered to be the most objective. And so I do believe that we need to bring objectivity into what we're doing from a scientific point of view and from an ethical point of view. But the truth is that you will get statistical information and statistical value. And statistical value is only good for a doctor to make decisions, but they really never apply to an individual patient. And so that is what we need to convey clearly to the patients, that statistics do not apply to them. And in fact, none of us are a number. And what happens to us is very peculiar to what is going to happen to us, according to God's will. So it is, while scientifically it's important to make statistical evaluations and objective evaluations like with clinical trials, effectively, they do not apply for every patient. So even though we know that statistically, vitamin C is going to help lung cancer patients, we need to individually treat that patient, and depending on the results and his response to therapy, we need to make whatever adjustments we need to make. So, yes, I do believe that clinical trials are important for us to establish criteria, but as far as individual patients are concerned, we need to establish individual therapies for them.
Okay. Now, something I'm really interested in, can someone have a genetic predisposition to cancer?
That's a very good question. There's very, very few, about three different type of cancers where a gene is actually inherited and where we would consider that to be a genetic disease. And cancer of the breast is not one of them. And that's probably the one that is most promoted by scientists and by the media as hereditary cancer. That if your mother had this gene and cancer of the breast and your aunt had cancer of the breast, then you probably inherited the possibility of developing cancer of the breast. That is not true. Just to talk a little bit about this. In China, there's only one case per 100,000 inhabitants of cancer of the breast. In America, it's 150. So America has 150 times more cancer of the breast than in China. So the conclusion would be that the Americans have the gene and that the Chinese don't have the gene. But interestingly, when Chinese women come to America and start eating and have the lifestyle of Americans, then they have the same exact incidence of breast cancer than Americans. So the gene really plays, genetics play a very minor role, if any. Secondly, there are two breast cancer mutation genes discovered to date. They were both discovered in England in 74 and 75, 1974 and 1975. And the interesting thing is that about 95% of the women that have cancer of the breast to date do not have that mutation. Hmm. And the other is that not all of the women that have that mutation will develop cancer of the breast. They will develop it in a much higher rate, but not all of them have to develop it. So really what we are inheriting is not bad genes. We are inheriting bad habits.
Okay.
So if you eat the same as your grandmother and you don't do exercise as your aunt didn't do exercise, well, then the possibilities of you developing the same disease are very high because you do the same things, not because you inherited bad genes.
Very interesting. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a short break.
Want to end cancer? Anyone can. Just vote with your feet. Join the Light the Night Walk to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. LLS has saved hundreds of thousands of lives since Light the Night took its first steps. Join now at lightthenight.org. It's the easiest way to get from someday to today.
Okay, we're back from our break. What should people know about surgery or chemotherapy or radiation treatments?
Well, they have to know that all of them have a very important place in the treatment of cancer. For instance, if I have a patient with a tumor in the colon that's obstructing that patient, and I know that beta carotene can reduce that tumor, and if I give that patient, you know, a pound of carrots, I'm going to kill that patient because that patient is going to be blocked. So we need to do the plumbing first, that the surgery, remove that tumor, and then I can give the carrots, okay? If I have a tumor in the windpipe and I know that Latril can reduce that, it's going to take 2 or 3 months. The patient is going to be dead in a week. Radiation therapy can reduce that tumor within, you know, starting within hours. So then when the patient is breathing again, then I can do the Latril. The same with chemotherapy. There are some tumors that we need to reduce in a fast way, and conventional therapy has proven to do that. What conventional therapy has not proven to do is to have the patients alive for a long time. So that is when the alternatives come in. So if I now that I remove the immediate threat of death from a cancer with conventional therapy, now I'm able to prolong the life of the patient with other anti-tumor agents that are natural, that are non-toxic, that a patient can take for years and years and years. Chemotherapy you can only take for a few months, if at all. And you cannot be operating on a patient on a continuous basis or give radiation therapy for a long time. They're extremely toxic, but they do have a place and a time when a patient can be benefit by it. And that is why at the Oasis of Hope Hospital, we are an integrative cancer center.
Okay, so when you say, you're saying integrative medicine, which is the total care approach. Is that correct?
That is correct. Not only the total care approach, but that we will integrate the conventional and the alternative therapies right. Whenever a patient is going to be benefited by that combination.
Yeah, that's perfect, perfect. The other thing that people struggle with is how can we strengthen our immune system while we're going through cancer treatment?
Well, I think that we've mentioned a number of things, and I would like to ask Daniel to expound this with what our emotions and our spiritual fortitude can do for that.
Yes, the field of psychoendocrinology is incredible to see the connection between our thoughts and what happens in the glands in the body. And there are many studies that are coming out where we're getting very precise on how a negative emotion creates a thought which will put our body into the fight or flight mode. And it all happens on what's called the HPA axis, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the adrenal glands working together. So at the point of cognition, we start to form neural pathways for signals to travel from the hypothalamus to the pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland releases in the bloodstreams, but also sends signals hardwired through our spinal column to the adrenal glands, which will then release different elements such as cortisol, epinephrine, and other hormones, which will cause a series of things to happen into the body. Whenever we perceive a threat or feel stress, we activate the HPA axis so that we can get more energy to different systems in our body to combat whatever the threat is. But our body only has a certain amount of energy, so it's very efficient in borrowing from one system to give the extra fuel to another system. And usually it's the immune system that becomes the victim when we need to increase our respiration and have more strength in our muscles. We borrow energy. Our body borrows energy from the immune system. And that's okay in the short term. If we're back in the caveman times and had to escape the T-Rex, your immune system is not going to help you survive an attack of a T-Rex, so put that on hold. But when you're facing cancer, it's a day-in, day-out process. And the number one most powerful healing agent against cancer is the one God gave you, your immune system. So if you're constantly facing the fear of cancer, its treatments, outcomes, negative side effects, you keep in a hyper-vigilant mode of stress that will keep you in that fight-or-flight response, and it becomes chronic stress instead of acute stress. Your immune system pays the price, and then all those good anti-tumor cells that are a part of your immune system, like the natural killer cells, stop working correctly, and so now your body is not combating cancer. Your immune system is depressed by all those negative emotions. So we work to help people generate positive thoughts that will actually boost the function of the immune system by managing the stress. And we use all kinds of interventions in our hospital, and we share this in our book, such as art therapy, music therapy, prayer, praise and worship, all the things that generate peace into a person. And we help them transition from the fear of cancer to a perspective that is healthy, where they can actually not be dying from cancer, but shift over to, I am living and I'm dealing with cancer. Dealing with cancer promotes far different thoughts than dying from cancer. And I believe, and I don't know, I'd love to hear Dr. Contreras, this is just my personal opinion, but I can see 100 years from now where we're not giving a lot of pharmaceuticals anymore, we're just training people how to have healing thoughts.
Yes, that is very powerful. In fact, there's quite a bit of clinical information and statistical information about the power of thoughts. There's a study that shows that for every minute of anger, your immune system is going to be significantly depressed for a period of 6 hours.
Wow.
And 1 minute of laughter, your immune system is going to be boosted significantly for a period of 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that we can, with our thoughts, manipulate tremendously what happens with our immune system and its ability to fight whatever disease. So, yes, I think that you're right, Daniel, that that if we can actually train ourselves to manipulate our immune response, and we do that on a daily basis. So we're angry most of the time, and we don't laugh most of the time. So we're manipulating our immune system to our detriment.
Right.
And we could learn to manipulate or exploit, in a good sense of the word, our immune system for our benefit with our thoughts. There's no question that that can be done.
Yeah, there's actually a clinical trial that's going on right now in the United States that is trying to dosify thoughts. They're actually trying to prescribe a thought and a duration that a person should focus their mind on that thought, and then they're measuring the outcomes in the endocrine system. So what are the glands secreting as a result of that? I think that is amazing. But the other thing to me that is so intriguing is that we've been able to identify very precisely what happens from the moment of cognition. What happens from the moment that you have that thought and the message start to be transmitted from your brain to the glands? But what we don't have, and science does not have, and I don't believe they have a way to find out, is precognition. What was it before the thought? Why do some people have negative thoughts? Why do others have healing thoughts? And I think, Dr. Contreras, that you've said it so clearly in the book, but when you lecture to patients, you always say spiritual fortitude is the most important thing for beating cancer.
Definitely. I do believe that, because when you, as I mentioned before, when you have a strong relationship with God and you know that you're going to be spending eternity in that place where there's going to be no more pain, no more sorrow, no more tears, that changes your perspective on life and death on this planet. And so, yes, to me, spiritual fortitude is the foundation for positive thoughts, or for a positive perspective on very negative things that are happening to us.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, it brings us peace, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, there's something else that you talk about in your book that I find very interesting, and that is the difference between cancer cure and cancer control. It seems like everybody's out for the cure, but you can live a really good life when your cancer's under control as well. Correct?
Yes, this is a concept that my father began working on way back in the 70s. And finally, until around 2000, the NCI started talking about the possibility of converting cancer into a chronic ailment. You know, when you're diagnosed with diabetes, you go, chucks, you know, no more chocolate cake. But somebody tells you cancer, and you're measuring yourself for your coffin. And so it's a big, big difference on the perception of cancer. But it's true, and as Daniel mentioned about Borga, and we have many, many patients like that, where we were not able to cure the patients, but our patients are enjoying life for years and years when they were told that they were going to be dead in months. So, yes, it is possible to convert cancer into a chronic ailment where the patient can enjoy life. And right now, most of the people, both doctors and patients, feel that you can either get rid of cancer or die from cancer.
Right.
There's no in-between.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that for a patient, after a few years of managing cancer and surviving cancer without getting rid of it, at the end of the day for them is the same as getting rid of it.
Yep.
And so it is not an unimportant event to have cancer control instead of getting rid of it. Because if you enjoy life for a long time, it's basically the same as beating it. So it is one of the ways to be successful against cancer if, you know, what was said that was going to kill you didn't kill you, and in fact, you are thriving with it. So stopping the threat is as important as getting rid of the threat.
Yeah, you bet.
I heard a really interesting story, and I use the word interesting, but about one of our patients who was given 6 months to live, and 5 years later was still living a pretty normal life, able to work and such. But the irony was that the oncologist that had given those 6 months to live, that kind of death sentence to the patient, actually passed away during those 5 years, and the patient outlived the oncologist.
That's a good story. Well, my dad was diagnosed with multiple myeloma about 14 years ago, and he was given a very short time to live, and he ended up living for just under 13 years, and it was all about cancer control. So this is good stuff.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Yes.
I'd like to change things up a little bit and have you tell us a little more about the Oasis of Hope Cancer Treatment Center.
Well, I'd like to share with that, and you know, I can do that. I have to tell you that being next to Dr. Contreras for 20 years and seeing him interact with the patients and seeing his heart, I think we can never underestimate the healing power of the doctor-physician relationship. I remember this was over 12 years ago that a young woman came to our hospital, and she had a tumor on the back of her knee about the size of a football. And the surgical oncologist that she had been seeing wanted to amputate, not just above the knee, but all the way up to the hip, trying to get a good margin to avoid recurrence of cancer. And it was a very, very difficult surgery, but Dr. Contreras went into the surgery with the attitude that the leg could quite possibly be saved. And I had the privilege of observing the surgery, and I saw him hour after hour working through every ligament, every nerve, every piece of tissue as he carefully, carefully removed this tumor. And it was, in fact, the size of a football. And I watched the woman recover, and I watched her walk out on that leg on her own power. A month later, she sent us a picture where she was taking a walk hand in hand with her 5-year-old daughter on the beach. And it impacted me, and I started to see how important it was for people to have a relationship with an oncologist that was going to do everything he could possibly do to not only save the person's life, but to preserve the quality of their life. And so that's what makes Oasis of Hope so different, is that the focus truly is on not only helping people live longer, but helping people live better. And the first thing that Dr. Contreras does out of his own heart is he offers people a free treatment plan and a whole explanation of what he would do to help them. And so, you know, hundreds of people a week will call us at our toll-free number, which is 888-500-4673. That's 888-500-HOPE. And they will, with the persons on the phone, they'll do a medical questionnaire, an interview, take all of the information from the patient, and then Dr. Contreras will sit there with the information and develop a whole protocol, and that's at no charge whatsoever. But he does it because he really wants to help people get well and empower them. And even if the patient doesn't decide to go to Oasis of Hope for treatment, they just got a second opinion for free. And you can pay over $1,000 for a second opinion, but Dr. Contreras does this day in, day out for people at no charge, no explanation. And so I would really encourage people to get the book and start getting empowered with information to position you from healing. It's available at all the websites like Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or you can go into your favorite bookshop and they can order it for you if you don't see it on the shelves. Get the book, but also call us. Call us today at 888-500-HOPE, and Dr. Contreras will design a whole protocol for you, and it will come with an explanation of why he recommends each thing and what the potential benefits are. And that really is the beginning, only the beginning of what Oasis of Hope is. You would really need to come and visit to experience it and discover that it's a completely different place. I witnessed this yesterday as I was sitting in the cafeteria, and I saw a table with eight women, all patients, in the cafeteria, and they were holding hands and they were praying for the healing of each other. I've been in many cancer treatment centers and I don't see those kinds of things.
Right.
But at Oasis of Hope, it's just part of the fabric of who we are.
Very good. Mr. Kennedy, is there a website that the listeners can go to as well?
Yes, you can log on to oasisofhope.com, just like it sounds. It's an Oasis of Hope. .com, and you can find our toll-free number there as well. There's a bunch of videos that will give you good information on that website as well, and you could actually do that medical questionnaire online, but I would highly suggest giving a call. You would never believe this, but the gentleman who's going to answer the phone, his name is Rick Hill. Rick is working on the phones to help other people for a very personal reason. 40 years ago, when he was just 23 or 24 years old, he went to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, was diagnosed with an untreatable cancer, and he found Oasis of Hope, and he was treated at Oasis of Hope. 40 years later, he came back to us, and he said, "I've had a long life. I have grandchildren. What can I do to give back?" Now he works on the information line helping others. So the man you call is actually a 40-year cancer victor from Oasis of Hope.
Wow, that's really cool. Is the book also available on the website, Mr. Kennedy?
It is. In fact, right there on oasisofhope.com, there's a button where you can click to order a hard copy, and there's three other buttons if you prefer to download it in Kindle or for the iPad or for the other Nook. The links are right there, so we're trying to make it very easy for you because we know that you're going to want to have the book because it's really going to help you.
Great, great. Well, Well, I would like to thank both of you for taking time out of your very busy schedules to discuss your new book, 50 Critical Cancer Answers, and sharing with us about Oasis of Hope as well. Appreciate the work you guys are doing, and God bless to both of you.
Thank you. God bless you too, Mark.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Remember that 50 Critical Cancer Answers and more information about Oasis of Hope is available at www.oasisofhope.com. That's www.oasisofhope.com. Remember, you can find us on Facebook or MySpace, and of course our website, www.help4cancer.net. That's www.help4cancer.net. We are excited that you can now find us on iTunes under the podcast section. You can do us a great favor by going to iTunes and giving us a fair and honest star rating. The short amount of time it takes to do this has tremendous impact on the show being able to get great guests and sponsors. You can also refer your friends to our shows at iTunes. You'll find us under Cancer Peace Radio. Thank you very much. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Dr. Contreras and Daniel Kennedy for a very, very interesting interview. Because of popular demand, we are going to be doing a follow-up on Medicare next Tuesday in partnership with the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. This is Mark Verheyt from Cancer Peace Radio signing off. God bless.
Each week, we will bring you real people with real stories and real experts that will talk about real life. Our goal is that you will find greater hope and better living for you as a cancer patient or as someone trying to love and serve a cancer patient, because you matter.